Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
And yes, you're back with Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King, and joining me on the show co-hosting today is Jason Hendricks. Say hello, Jason.
Hello. You know, Brett, I just realized for the first time, you don't mention Chicago in the opening. Like, you hit every other major financial hub, and you ignore Chicago.
Chicago. Just because you live in Chicago, dude.
What do you think makes it a financial hub?
Well, I don't even, you could say every city's a every major city's a financial hub, but yeah. All right. Well, I'm not, put it this way, I don't think I'm going to re-record the intro to put Chicago in.
All right.
Sorry, dude. How much fintech investment did Chicago get last year?
Actually, pretty substantial, despite it being known so much as a trading hub. There's a lot going on here. People forget that, you know, this is the home of Braintree, acquired by PayPal. You have Discover here. You have a lot, especially around the information side of the house and applications for AI, given the depth at the University of Chicago.
Braintree, I'll give you.
Braintree, you'll give me. What about Avant?
Yeah, really, I don't know, fintech, more tech, right? But, and Discover, well, okay. You know, this is the industry's definition of fintech. But anyway, we're getting off the track, dude. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Before we get to the news, a couple of announcements. We do have, a great show lined up for you guys today. We're pleased to have Doug Nielsen from US Bank joining us. He's, along with Jason, they were at South By last week, so we're going to hear about what's happened at South By. And then in the second half of the show, Jim is going to be back on, Jim Morales, and he's going to be talking to us about Amazon Bank, and we're going to be getting into that. So,
of course, you didn't mention Cleveland, Ohio as a fintech. Never mind.
Thanks,
Jim. Touché, touché.
All right, so... I didn't mention Austin, Texas either. Yeah, but
I think there's a bunch of great companies there too. So
I didn't mention Ballarat in Victoria.
Yeah,
and you could call it a fintech hub because they, it was huge gold city.
Yeah,
back in the
Silicon gold mine.
Seriously. All right.
You've just sparked a long-running war. I can sense it right now. I'm going to dig up every obscure possible reference to a fintech hub dating back to, the ancient trading ports, just for you.
Okay. Yeah, there we go. In the conference announcement side, before we get to the news, we do have, of course, coming up due on by April the 11th. If you're interested, CFSI's Innovation Lab is, this is the initiative they're doing with JP Morgan Chase. They have this FinLab. You can get grants up to $250,000 from that. Essentially looking at new solutions to improve consumer financial health in the United States. If you want to join that, we'll tweet out on the Twitter channel for the CFSI Innovation Lab, but make sure you check that out. Or you can go to cfsinnovation.com and follow it through that way to get to the FinLab. But we, as a board member and participant with CFSI, we'd love to have you guys, focus on that. On April 9th, 11th, also, we have Flourish, the branded currency conference, discussing monetary, social, and loyalty transactions. JP Nichols is going to be along there doing the keynote. And Jason, you're going to be there as well, right?
Yeah, I'll be doing a fireside, and we're actually going to be doing live recording, just like the county fair where you'd watch the evening news. We'll be there doing live recordings of everything that's happening.
Right, so where can we get more information on the event?
Well, even better than more information, Provoke listeners get 20% off when they register at flourishcon.com using Provoke20. So flourishcon.com, or if you Google branded currency, I believe it shows up there as well. And I'll put that on the Twitter as well.
Right. So check that out. I've got a couple of events coming up as well. If you're going to be for April, I'm going to be in China on April 25th, then 26th in Berlin. So I'll post some of those details of those events for you guys as well. Got a couple of other events coming up for the remainder of March as well, including I can't even find it now on the calendar, so I'll have to get back to that later. But a bunch of stuff coming up, so I'll get those conference announcements in. You can tell I'm really, I'm struggling today. Jet lag coming back from Tokyo yesterday, but we'll get through the show. Glad you can be here to support it. Now, in the news, of course, big news is Amazon is going to be launching a checking account competitor. We're going to get all into that, of course, next segment, the second half of the segment. But the other news is, of course, that we're seeing, again, fluctuations in the cryptocurrency market, Bitcoin and Ethereum taking a big hit. Maybe Jim, you can jump in here as well. Do you guys, Jim, do you guys think that had anything to do with John Oliver's special on cryptocurrency on Sunday night, the price adjustment here?
So I've got to talk. Go ahead, Jim. You take first lead.
Go ahead.
I'm giving a talk coming up for a bankers association on crypto and blockchain, and I honestly think I'm just going to play the John Oliver segment. And it was that good.
I think Brock Pierce got a bad rap, though. Apart from the fact that EOS, raised $1 billion in, $1.5 billion in token funding, but Brock is when it comes to this stuff, I think he's probably, he's one of the key thinkers in this space. I think he got a bad rap. That's my own personal assessment, but. Jim, what are your thoughts on the whole thing, the John Oliver special?
It is almost impossible to track why crypto right now is going down or why it went up as high as it did. It's momentum, and I think a lot of people, when things start to go south a little bit, they get cold feet, and there's not the stoppers like the stock market has. So, when the stock market has a couple bad days, they're actually, mechanisms
you can,
in place.
Yeah, you can track why it is,
Well, then there's fundamentals. I think that's key to the stopper you talked about, Jim, right? If you look at historical, pick your method, whether it's, a DCF or it's multiples, you can look at the underlying fundamentals of it and say, hey, I think it's still within a reasonable range. If you lack the fundamentals piece of it, it gets really hard to say, hey, when is it overvalued versus undervalued?
So pretty interesting to see some of the stuff that's happening in the news. You can see that Japan has doubled down on distributed ledger technology. Of course, some of the big big firms Tokyo Mitsubishi, UFJ, SoftBank, and others are looking at launching their own tokens in that market, their own cryptocurrencies. There's a lot of stuff happening, really bullish on the crypto side in Japan. The other news, of course, is there's a bunch of interesting stuff going on right now. Theranos director, she was what's her name again? I don't have it in front of me, but. She was charged with fraud by the SEC, and did a deal with the SEC. I can't. This is what jet lag does to you. So because I can't find that news story right now, but of course, also the European Banking Authority is establishing their big fintech knowledge hub. So there is a lot of question about this at Money 2020 this week, whether this is going to involve actually setting up, a type of incubator or funds for this. we've seen Paris, for example, with their fintech setup, not us just create an incubator hub, but create some funding behind that, create visa concessions and so forth. It'd be really interesting to see that if the European Union does something similar as part of this this fintech knowledge hub. But obviously, starting to feel like they need to make some changes there, Jason.
Yeah, the European Banking Authority also just this week published a really great fintech roadmap laying out its priorities for 2018 and 2019. Definitely recommend people check that out at eba.europa.eu. Really interesting to see how proactive they're being in terms of laying out an agenda and fostering a lot of the discussion. It's great to actually see that it isn't the regulators being drug along behind the innovation school bus.
Yeah, so I was sorry, just going back to that, Elizabeth Holmes is the Theranos CEO who's been the action of SEC action, accusing her of fraud. So,
Given all the scrutiny that Theranos had and professional institutional investors, it does raise the question, going back on the crypto side, with the number of ICOs and people just writing a white paper and raising money, there's a lot of regulators looking from all sides, whether it be, the SEC, from FINRA, you name it. There's a lot of money going into these ICOs right now that do have me worried about the fraud perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So some other news, you do have more movements with some of the traditional incumbents making more moves into the digital space. Standard Chartered is looking to set up in Africa a pure play online-only bank. So getting into the challenger bank model themselves. Barclays has done a partnership with Coinbase. JP Morgan has taken a stake in the data visualization startup Mosaic. OCBC in Singapore has announced this week at Money 2020 that they're spending $10 million over the next 3 years to develop an artificial intelligence lab. Doesn't sound like a lot of money for AI, but for a bank dipping their toe in the water, it could be interesting. So that's some of the industry news that's out there right now. Before we dive into it, though, I did want to say that, did you guys see the news about Matt Damon?
No.
So Matt Damon is apparently moving to Australia, and he's cited Trump's policies as a reason for that. So that's sure to get some interesting reaction in the US. But anyway, I thought that was funny news.
that is fantastic news. I thought you're going to go a different direction with that.
So people ask me often, I got asked when I came back into the country yesterday from the border patrol guy at JFK. He asked why I didn't live in Australia. Why I lived in New York instead of Australia. And I said the reason was there was too many Australians living there.
Oh.
Boom, boom. All right, so I think I just lost our whole Australian audience.
Australian audience just went dark. Before we transition, I do want to give a quick shout out to a bunch of our partners and sponsors that helped make the FinTech Luminaires event a tremendous success at South by Southwest.
So this was the special FinTech evening at South by.
FinTech evening. Great sponsors. Huge shout out to SP Global, Yodlee InvestNet, the Center for Financial Service Innovation Labs team, and Sunrise Bank. And we're going to get into a little bit here with Doug Nielsen in a moment, who is a regular attendee of this event. But it pulls together, I think we had close to 500 people flow through the doors. But all decision makers, we had more than double that apply to attend, which was pretty cool. But it's highly curated, so the people you meet are sure to be, of a caliber in the space that they're decision makers. They're just not playing around with it. And so it was a great time, and we had a new media partner this year, someone that we're going to hear from more on this show, but the Financial Revolutionists, which is an email newsletter every week. If you don't read Greg's roundup, he is very dry wit, a la Brett King, gives a great roundup of the week, and it's a great way to start your Saturday. Of course, my wife is always like, what is with you reading The Financial Revolutionist with a cup of coffee like a giddy little school kid every Saturday?
So why are we going to talk about South By today? Well, you know, if you're not familiar with South By Southwest, then, you know, it's been a huge platform for launching some of the hottest startups over the last few years. In 2007, Twitter launched at South By. In 2009, Foursquare and Gowalla. Food Spotting in 2010. We had Groupon do a launch there. Meerkat in 2015. Who else came out? Foursquare launched at South By, and Tim Ferriss, he launched his first book, The 4-Hour Work Week, at South By in 2007 as well. So, South By has been a massive platform for launching startups over the last few years. So what we thought we'd do is we sent Jason down there to, see what was the big on the rumor mills at South By, but also specifically to see what was happening in terms of fintech startups represented at South By this year. So he was joined by, of course, from US Bank, Doug, who's joining us, Doug Nielsen. He's a Senior Vice President, Innovation Research and Development at US Bank. So Doug, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, and I've got to put my plug in for, you know, fintech hubs. Being based out in Atlanta for U.S. Bank, I think we all know that at least 75% of the card transaction processed in the U.S. come through a company that's based here in Atlanta. So shout out to my folks.
So you want me to add Atlanta now to the show intro?
Add Atlanta and Nashville.
Nashville.
Okay. Hey. Yeah. So, Brett, let's start with the most important questions since Doug was there at the same time and at the party. So that was Saturday. Have you recovered yet? Brett is jet lagged. And I think you and I are also synapses firing a little slowly at the moment.
Yeah, I have to admit, I've kind of been on this conference binge. So I literally left Sunday before last for the Bank Innovation 2018 conference, and I had the joy of being on an open API and open banking panel there, where I actually got a couple protesters come in and protest right before our panel started. So that was a first for me as
a speaker. You got protesters? Wow. Yeah, I don't think we've ever gotten protesters. We have to up our game.
Yeah.
No, not unless you count bank CEOs shouting me down at events, but no.
What were they protesting, Doug?
Well, they were protesting against the U.S. Bank having loans to oil companies or frackers, those type companies in like North Dakota. So they took umbrage at our policies there. But luckily, the 150 or so people in the audience pretty much shouted them down within about 2 minutes, and they were quickly gone, and we could go back to talking about the ins and the outs of open APIs and all of that. So that was the start of my week on a Monday, and then I came home for a day, and then I was straight off to South By on Friday afternoon, and was there until took a late flight out on Tuesday night. So I'm just kind of barely recovering, but it was, believe it or not, my first time there, even though our team regularly goes down there every year for the past 7-8 years. It was just like, I felt like a kid in the candy store.
So, Jason, how many times have you been to South By?
This is my second time as a speaker, and this is, I believe, my seventh time as an attendee. And so it's been interesting to watch the evolution. And I'd say, you know, you called out, you know, what's happening with the fintech startups. I'd say one of the most interested aspects
of startups in general.
Yeah. Startups in general, yes. But actually on our side of the house, it's the number of banks that are beginning to participate and the insurance companies and the panels that are dedicated towards it. In fact, it's a very specific drive that South By is making. And, you know, folks from U.S. Bank have attended forever. In fact, you know, it's one of the ways I got to know Doug's boss, Dominic Venturo, who has been on this show before.
I remember Dominic. Yeah.
And so what's interesting, you know, when you think of the interactive festival and you think about how customer-driven it is, how design-centric it is, you know, our industry's woken up to this is a great resource. It isn't just about attending our industry-specific Money 2020s and Finovates. There's a lot that you can learn based on how others are approaching the world.
But Doug, I found that interesting at Money 2020 this week as well, is that, you know, you got a lot of banks, you know, with their stands at Money 2020, and a lot more banks participating. The keynote was, or the opening session was an interview between James Lloyd from EY, the fintech lead for EY in Asia, and Piyush from the CEO of DBS. And so you do have a lot more of the incumbents joining these events now. You know, I guess that's fairly predictable when you have, it's the cycle, you know, you get the fintechs and the early adopters, they come in first, and, you know, 4 or 5 years later, the incumbents follow. You know, I'm pretty sure that's the way it happens in other industries as well.
Although, Brett, if you've been to South by Southwest, you know, imagine a space that looks and feels much more like Bonnaroo than it does a banking conference. And so does
I was there in 2011, and then I think 2013 and 14 at South by. So I've done it 3 times.
Well, given that U.S. Bank has been going with some longevity, and this was Doug's first time, Doug, would love to hear, what were your takeaways? You know, what were you expecting, and what did you walk away with?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me the biggest value I got is that, to your guys' point, we all go to a lot of fintech conferences, and you get a lot of real deep discussions, and you present on topics that are specific to the financial industry. But the joy of this conference for me is that you got to look at technologies, you know, emerging type of technologies, as well as disruptive business models that you've been kind of scoping out, whether that be, you know, AI and machine learning, IoT, the shared economy, open APIs, digital identity. But you're looking at it from a very cross-industry perspective, so it really opened my eyes what different industry verticals were doing with some of these technologies, which was really pretty fascinating. And one of my favorite sessions was actually, it was called 5 Major Generational Shifts in Understanding Gen Z. So they had, everybody was pretty young. I think the oldest person was a ancient 40-year-old from EY, their global tech trend scout. Everybody else was kind of in their 20s, and the lead speaker, if you will, of the panel was a lady named Tiffany Zong from Zebra Intelligence. She also has a startup or a VC for startups called Pineapple Venture Capital. And just her talking about how to reach that generation, and it was fascinating looking at it from a financial literacy perspective. A couple of the crowd folks asked questions like, well, what do you think about Gen Z and financial literacy? And she says, oh, it's ridiculous. In other words, when Gen Z folks go to bank sites or use bank products, digital, mobile, et cetera, they just don't get it. It's just not kind of customized to them. And they said they use Venmo, you know, all over the place, but they don't really see it as a financial app. It's kind of almost like sending money between
your friends,
but it's
an extension to their
like
network,
Monopoly money. Yeah, so it's fascinating that way, just to be able to get a completely different lens on what's going on, and it kind of either confirms some of your assumptions or corrects some of your assumptions on the speed of technology adoption and where things are going.
Well, I think, you know, that points to the research I did for Bank 4.0, Doug, which is pretty interesting. You know, you've actually got worse financial literacy now than, you know, for baby boomers and Gen X, you know, with with millennials and or Gen Ys and Gen Zs. But what really struck me is the massive shift in credit card usage. So, you know, I mentioned this on the show last week, but I'm going to say it again because it's so significant, is that, you know, we're at the lowest adoption in 40 years of credit card usage for the you know, 18 and above age bracket, you know, 18 sort of to 25 age bracket. And that's despite the fact over the last, and that's over the last 7 years. So it's a, this is not, you know, spot data, it's a trend. And then despite that, the fact that, you know, the card schemes and the card providers have doubled their spend on reward programs in that same period. So we've gone to $23 billion annual spend in rewards incentives. So rewards are not moving the needle. But part of that is that their behavior around the utility of banking and money movement is changing because of the technology tools that they use. So, you know, access to a plastic card with airline miles is a very low incentive scheme when you're using tools like Venmo, and that's how your network moves money, right?
Yeah. Doug, did you see any of the embedded experience demonstrations and things like that? Because that's what I found also very interesting, because you highlighted seeing how other industries are looking at and using these new technologies. You know, within banking, we tend to think of AI and voice applications predominantly as input-output. And I was shocked at some of the other utility. What other technology did you see that was exciting along those lines?
Yeah, well, one area, and it might be a slight tangent, is just seeing some parallels across some different, you know, industry use cases. So went to a good session about the sharing economy and kind of trust as a very, you know, important part of, you know, the currency of the sharing economy. And it was an interesting parallel between that session and one on kind of more how the automotive dealership and selling of cars and usage of cars is changing. So you folks have probably heard the concept from Airbnb, where part of their sell-in to hosts, those that rent their rooms, is that they're actually getting people to actually either add or spruce up some rooms so they can use that for, you know, additional income, say when their kids move out of the house. Well, kind of a parallel development in the car industry, Mercedes-Benz was talking about how they're working with a new startup called Turo, T-U-R-O, where they're actually trying to convince people to buy a higher-end Mercedes, for example, under the assumption that using this Turo car sharing app, they can actually, you know, kind of rent out their car for part of the time when they're not using it. So to me, it's just been interesting to see how, you know, not only are the technologies kind of converging and overlapping, you know, some of the, you know, kind of the business models also tend to be, you know, kind of shared across industries, if you will.
I actually predicted in Bank 4.0 that bank financing will come with the option in the future for autonomous vehicles. You'll be able to share the leasing costs with a ride sharing or, you know, network such as Uber or Grab or one of those guys, by getting them to fund that through use of your autonomous vehicle for driving on the network part of the time.
Well, I mean, the entire concept of fractionalizing this, you know, and I think that is going to be, as you pointed out, Brett, a much broader trend that is going to drive a lot more than rewards points on your credit card. The idea of embedded experience, and so the idea that, you know, as I'm go ahead.
So, because we only got a couple of minutes before the break, but Doug, you know, what apart from that experiencing, what were the companies that really, or the things that really stood out to you?
Yeah, and I think that the big takeaways for me, if I look at the AI space, I mean, obviously everybody is experimenting and trying to move as fast forward with a lot of use cases across the broad definition that is, you know, artificial intelligence and machine learning. But I think it's just seeing how rapidly things are moving in that one of the speakers talked about the fact that we're beginning to come to the end of the smartphone era, that effectively with the advance of AI as well as all the machine learning behind that and voice, that voice will become the new browser, if you will. And then you look at the companies that are spending big money, people like Baidu, Tencent that owns WeChat, as well as Alibaba, you could almost say that those three are they as much AI companies as they are kind of financial companies. And just with the obviously Alibaba has already made it here with Alipay, WeChat is on its way in. I kind of feel like, and it's probably maybe oversaid by people, but as a bank, I'm not sure if we're as much worried about our direct traditional legacy competitors as we are about, you know, both the tech giants and also those coming from overseas that are spending huge amounts of money in that space. So as they say, data is the new oil. So that's, I guess, what really kind of impressed me the most of just how rapidly some of this change is coming about.
And what about in terms of the after session parties and gatherings and stuff like that? What was getting the big buzz during South By?
Yeah, it's funny. It seems like one could have gone to five or six parties every night. Shout out to Jason. The FinTech Luminaries party was great. Andreessen Horowitz had a great party. Striver, the VRAR. Company had a great one. It just seemed like there was a unending flow of parties that you could just kind of walk two blocks, go from there. I ended up one night spending a little time with my Atlanta colleagues at the Choose Atlanta house that was kind of promoting, you know, fintechs and other technology companies to come to Atlanta. So there's just I felt spoiled for choice during the whole 4 days that I was there.
Fair enough. Well, that's great. So, Doug, that was a good summary. Thanks for giving us an update on South By. Listen, guys, we're going to take a quick break, but before we do, don't forget you can participate in the conversation if you want. Get onto Twitter, use the hashtag #BreakingBanks, and send us a question if you want to get some news on the show or something like that. Don't be afraid to put that out, or just use Jason or my personal Twitter IDs. If you want to ping us as well, at Brett King, and Jason, your Twitter ID?
At Jason Henricks, spelled that's like it. A hen that's rich with an S.
Rich with an S. I like that. You've obviously had to use that before. So.
Well, yeah, you know, I look a lot like Jimi Hendricks, and I have the same musical talent, and so people always try and spell it the same.
Yeah, okay. All right. I'll let that pass. So, yeah, let's have a quick break, and then after the break, we'll get Jim on, and we'll talk about the big news that everyone's talking about in the United States. What's Amazon going to do in the banking space? So we'll be right back after this quick break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Now, before we get back to talking about fintech, I want to take a quick moment to tell you about eFinancialCareers.com, one of the supporters of the show. They're the world's leading career site for financial service professionals for over 15 years. eFinancialCareers.com partners with leading financial and fintech firms, so your resume is seen by all the top companies and recruiters in the US and abroad. Now, as we all know, financial services is a very dynamic, ever-changing industry, and eFinancial Careers provides valuable resources from helpful career coaching to interview strategies and tools that keep you up to speed and well-informed with what's happening now in the industry and what it means for your career. Registration's free for financial professionals. Make sure you take advantage of all the resources they have to offer. So check them out, eFinancialCareers.com.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Hey, you are back with Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King, and joining me as co-host today is Jason Hendricks. Say hello, Jason.
Hello.
Yep. And I know we went through all this before, of course, but Jim from Financial Brand is back with us this week. So, Jim, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here.
Now, Jim, of course, the big news this week everyone's talking about, not only in the US but offshore, is Amazon's entry into, or potential entry into, the banking space. It looks like it's pretty definite now. Now, in the interest of clarity around this, Amazon isn't getting a banking license and intending to be a bank, but they will be competing with banks by offering what products to Amazon users?
Well, there's a couple different ways they're looking at it. There, one is a partnership with Cap One and maybe Chase and maybe some other banks, kind of white labeling a checking account product, but really accessing the Amazon customer file, do so, most likely the Prime file. Another way is to have those organizations be the back office for an Amazon account. And there hasn't been a lot of clarity around which way they would go, but it does put a whole new wrinkle, not one that's surprising to any of us in the industry, but it puts a whole new wrinkle into the potential of combining an organization like an Amazon or a Google or one of the other big tech companies with a banking organization to move market share. Because right now, financial organizations are basically just spinning their wheels in their acquisition efforts. There are small gains here and there, but they're stealing from each other, just very much like it's in the UK.
Yeah, now this shouldn't be a surprise, because we've seen this happen in some other markets, particularly with Ant Financial Alipay in China, right?
Yeah, and you know, when you look at it, you know, we this is not, as I said, not a big surprise, but it completely changes the dynamics. Because if you look at a traditional financial institution, a checking account is the foundation upon which a relationship is built, but there's not a whole lot of money in it. I mean, there's not a good return on just a checking account. But when you look at an Amazon, and if you look at the possibility of them being an acquisition engine, for lack of a better term, there's a lot to be leveraged there. So I read an article at the Financial Brand. I brought up the fact that what happens if Amazon says, you know, open a checking account with us, and we're going to give you the Prime membership for free. Okay, totally a possibility, because the reason why they're doing the Prime is to get the relationship with the consumer. But that's an $85, $95, $105 value that the bank can't match, because banks don't have that kind of leverage on the checking account to be able to just all of a sudden go from a free account, which already is struggling, they're struggling with, to an account that actually pays or waives the fee. Or another way to say it is, okay, Amazon says, we'll give you 10% back on any purchase at Amazon if you open a checking account with us. So when you're looking at a big tech firm, they have a lot of revenue streams that are outside the realm of a traditional banking organization, pretty much the way we've seen what we would call the open banking model if you went beyond just banking services, what it could look like. But with Amazon at the helm, you have the potential to really, they could leverage a lot of different assets to get somebody to move market. And on top of that, when they get that relationship, if they get that relationship, they then have all that additional data on the customer's purchase pattern.
So Piyush at DBS tackled this at the opener for Monday 2020 on Tuesday, and he said a lot of the banks have dismissed the fintechs because they have trouble getting scale, you know. But he pointed out, I think, very, you know, succinctly and accurately, that when you look at the big tech companies, you know, Alibaba, you know, Alipay, Ant Financial in China, Tencent, WeChat, Amazon here in the United States, he said their effective acquisition cost is zero, because they already have hundreds of millions of customers. So, you know, I it, would it would it be your assessment, Jim, and Jason, you can jump in here as well, that what we're seeing with the Alibabas of the world, Tencent, WeChat, with Amazon here, is a fundamental shift, a reimagining and a complete re-engineering of the economics of acquisition and distribution of basic banking accounts?
Well, I would say definitely. And on top of that, you know, Amazon has more information on how a person uses their e-commerce engagement with them. You know, their Prime customer is not just Prime for buying Amazon services, but we saw that when they acquired Whole Foods, that all of a sudden you say, well, look at the overlap between Prime customers and where the Whole Foods stores are. So you all of a sudden have not just a customer, but you have a really, really highly segmented customers to how they transact business. And you take that and you add a debit card, you add a payment process, you add a, you know, a retail element on this. And, you know, the banking industry continually looks at the new banking ecosystem saying, well, maybe the bank can be in the center. Well, all of a sudden, it's the e-commerce site that's in the center, the big tech companies in the center, and banking is simply one of those, you know, for lack of a better term, dumb rails that ends up, yes, they may end up holding the funds, but they don't control those. And they certainly don't control the insight that's built along the lines of what's being done on that transaction.
Well, and Jim, along that point, you know, you talked about what an Amazon can afford to pay because they make money in other streams. I think your last point is the one that really resonates with me is forget the monetary aspect. They can do more from a convenience point of view. They know more about me. I'm using it more frequently in a way that they can actually do a lot with that data that I'm actually not going to be upset about. I want them to give me better offers. I'm not going to name the card that sends me, here's your monthly offers. Not once has that email from that card given me an offer that I actually care about that I'm going to click through. In fact, the only reason I open that email anymore so I can laugh at the offers that they send me versus Amazon's recommendations all the time. This is how I figure out what I'm going to read next, the things that we should be purchasing, who else has purchased it. If they can embed the commerce and even the financing aspect in there, I think that's on its way to reimagining what the world of commerce and therefore banking looks like. And, you know, Doug, if you're still on the line, would love to hear a banker's perspective on that.
Yeah, Doug, can you say what the internal conversation has been like on this at US Bank?
Not really at liberty to share a lot, but, you know, I think it's, you guys raise, you know, valid points. You know, I think consumers are looking for, obviously, value add, and I think it's a challenge to us as banks to say, how can we make sure that, you know, a collection of the solutions that we have or and accounts that we have are going to be of value to our customers. So it's, you know, I think it's a shot across the bow, and I think definitely is going to require some serious thought to see what we do.
Well, you know, based on what you said in the last segment, too, geez, who's got the leg up on voice?
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
But Amazon's voice technology, commerce, exactly. they haven't released all their APIs on voice, but bottom line is they have enough devices out there to immediately make a big inroads into what I'll call voice banking or voice transactions. And you link all these things together, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say, geez, this entire model that they could put together, even if the banks are still in existence from the standpoint of holding funds, that's not even a guarantee either. I mean, we've already seen that Starbucks and other organizations can hold funds in different ways. So, you know, it's got to be recognized. But again, when we all talk about the customer experience, you know, the number one trend or prediction for 2018 from the Financial Brand and Digital Banking Report was improving the customer journey and the customer experience. And as Jason mentioned, you know, who does that better really than an Amazon on a non-banking transaction? But the bar is not set too high from a banking perspective as to personalization.
Well, the other interesting news from Amazon this week, actually it was last week, was that they've hired a big ex-mortgage guy. So it looks like they're going to get into mortgages potentially as well.
Listen, again, it's not a bad move.
But they also want to avoid government scrutiny. The ability to partner And you know, let's take an Amazon partner with a Quicken or a Rocket or one of the other mortgage companies.
Which, yeah, they did. Well, SoFi for small business lending, yeah.
They're simply going to be a distributor.
Well, but that's the point, isn't it? They change the distribution economics. And so, you know, they make it really, they have very marginal costs on acquiring customers. And, you know, they can do this, as you say, Jim, is, you know, it's pretty compelling. Get an Amazon bank account, get your Amazon Prime free or something like that. You know, those sort of deals would just, they'd just eat it up. But here's the challenge. If you're one of the 5,500 community banks in America, or you know, one of the 6,000 credit unions, how do you compete against that when you got to get people into a branch to sign a piece of paper to open a bank account? You know, how does that distribution model compete?
Well, Brett, I think that is actually one of the best parts about this Amazon move for banking. Is it, and Doug hinted at this, this is a forcing function to get us out of a comfort zone where for too long we've said, oh no, we can't do that something new because we're limited by our technology stacks. We're limited by our worldview of what our customers want because we think checking account, and our customers are thinking, I don't need a checking account. I need to conduct transactions. And then we get the regulatory piece in there. It's like, oh no, new is dangerous and scary. We can't possibly do something new. Well, guess what? Now we don't have a choice but to do something new. And I think there really still is a place for both large banks and community banks. We just can't all be doing the same thing and pretend, you know, if I have to talk to another community bank and ask, what's your differentiator? And they tell me their relationship and I walk across the street.
Service, yeah.
Yeah, right, service, right?
Well, this is the and guys, the foundation of the Amazon article that we did in the Financial Brand was the fact that Citibank announced that they may be starting up a digital-only bank to fill in the gaps because they basically just serve the big cities now with investment and small business accounts. But the reality is, he said, okay, we expect to have something certainly before 3 years. Guys, I don't care if you're thinking new or not. If your time frame is 3 years, Amazon will already have a bank by that point and be partnering with a bank by that point. And, you know, the whole time frame of the way a major bank or any bank has to look at innovation and product development and just overall any kind of movement has got to be transformational. It has to be very disruptive, and it's got to be quick. And I'm sorry, you know, JP says it really well. When you talk about the fast follower thing, banks are really good at being a follower. They're not really good at being fast. And
I loved Shevlin's article on the Financial Brand on that respect. He said there's no such thing as a fast follower. It's just not so slow laggard.
Oh, exactly. Exactly right. And, you know, again, that was a wake-up call where you say, how can a big bank say, we hope to have something out within 3 years? I can't tell you what's going to happen in 12 months. You know, yep. And certainly, you know.
Hey, guys, just a quick one. Just want to jump in here. A shout-out to Theo Lau, who's engaged us on Twitter. And, you know, just want to say a quick hello to Theo. She's been on the show before, of course, but thanks for chiming in on Twitter, Theo, as well. So, sorry, Jim, please continue.
Yeah, the other thing was just that banks can do it. I mean, DBS built a digital-only bank for India in 9 months. And when they were asked, how did you set the timeline as 9 months, the comment made by Sonia was great, saying, well, we thought that's how long it took to birth a baby, and we thought this shouldn't be nearly as hard. You know, yeah.
Well, I heard a different side of that they said it as 6 months, and it took them a little bit longer. But yeah, it's still pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, it can be done. It's called focus. Yeah.
Well, and Doug, are you at liberty to say a little bit, because you know, of the big banks, you know, always enjoy the conversations I have with folks on your team, because of the top five, you are the smallest and yet one of the most adaptive. You're not taking a brute force approach. How is U.S. Bank thinking about that?
Well, I mean, I think we're obviously trying to, as rapidly as we can, you know, innovate and develop new both digital and mobile solutions. We realize that in order to really make sure that we can compete with, you know, existing and new competitors, that we have best-in-class, you know, products and services. And we have to think about it differently and partner differently. And that's part of the reason, for example, part of my team's role is to engage, you know, fintech startups to say, we can't develop it all in-house quickly enough to meet the kind of timelines that the competitors, traditional and non, have. So that's why we try to, as rapidly we can, ideate and test and learn and get to market new solutions from that perspective.
Well, it also shows the value of a good culture. I mean, your bank, I use it continuously in examples, the fact that it, within the bank, the culture is to innovate. And you know, one of the few U.S.-based organizations that have that culture. I mean, a lot of times when people say, you know, what are the most innovative banks in the U.S., I said, well, should I use, after you look at the ones that are foreign-based, because there's a different culture, and you guys really have done a good job of instilled that culture of saying, let's find better ways to do things, and it doesn't mean that we have to build them totally within ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And just a quick, for example, recently of that, where we worked with our mortgage lending team, sorry, not mortgage lending, but our auto lending team. So they teamed up with Auto Gravity, and just, I guess, the week before last announced that you can literally go to a site, to usbank.com. You can literally get a pre-approval on an auto loan for the specific car that you want to buy before you actually get to the dealership. And I guess fairly similar to what Chase, I think, did with AutoFi. And again, it may not seem like, you know, a revolutionary change, but it's moving towards providing customers with the kind of customer experience that they would expect, and not kind of the old school, gosh, I guess I'm going to have to go and get, you know, beat up by the dealer for 4 hours before I can get away with and have my car and drive off. So again, it's just ways to try to figure out, how do we partner, how do we, instead of have to wait for what would probably have been a fairly long build, to get something to market that hopefully will please the customers from a process and all that perspective.
So, you know, this comes back to part of the sort of holy grail of fintech, which is low friction engagement and ultimately real time, that you have to be able to compete in real time. And Amazon, clearly with their voice commerce capability, is really where, you know, they're having to think about dialogue-based, real-time engagement, this sort of stuff. But, you know, I think from a design perspective, what's really interesting, and Jim, you know, you might have some thoughts on this as well, is if Amazon is enabling you to, you know, open an account, you know, using, say, voice or link to the Prime account or something, or, you know, apply for some basic savings capabilities and stuff like that through voice, then that really does set the bar for frictionless real-time engagement. You know, if you still require a wet signature on a piece of paper to do what Amazon can do over Amazon Alexa or on their website, isn't that where the pressure is going to be?
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, I look at it and say, you know, what does Amazon have to do with a know your customer parameter when they've known their customer for 6 or 7 or 8 years? I mean, the banking organizations don't have relationships as long as Amazon has in many cases. And you're not going to, they can avoid those brand new entries into the marketplace, but their prime customers are people that have already paid for service. And, that does a whole lot towards the whole issue of know your customer. So you look at the ability for them to open accounts with ease and with comfort of knowing that this person's not going to go south. They've already engaged with them in an e-commerce way. They've done everything that we hope to be able to do in the banking industry when we open
an account. Yeah, they've been doing it for years, So, hey, Jason, at Fintech Forge, and then, Doug, I might ask you this question as a banker as well, but at Fintech Forge, how are you and JP going about helping – how many of the banks that you work with are saying to you guys, well, we've got to get rid of paper for onboarding customers, and, you know, how do we do it?
Oh, man. So of our top five things that we have banks asking for help on, going paperless. So when we talk digital, it's not just about putting digital lipstick on the pig front end, but it's actually, how do we fix the back office? That it's the tactical layer, not the experience layer. That's a top five. And then separately, but related, digital onboarding is another key. And I like to call out there's a difference between opening an account digitally versus actually getting that customer onboarded, which ends with them being an active customer. And far too often, you know, many of the banks that we run into is they're still just focused on how do I get the account open. It's much deeper than that. You want to make them a real customer like Amazon did.
So Doug, real quickly, as an innovation lead at US Bank, do you have high level support for removing paper from the process, or is compliance and risk, sort of the immune system that tries to prevent that?
No, it's a great question. I think actually our risk teams are really very good partners with us, and I'll just give a quick for example. When we first started to engage with fintech startups out in Silicon Valley, this was about 3 years ago, we pretty quickly realized that if we wanted to do any testing and learning, you know, POCs, prototypes, et cetera, with these startups, we couldn't make them go through the typical bank 6-month medical exam to get to be a partner with us, and they would be out of runway, if you will. So we were able to come up with what I affectionately call our TSA pre-line process. So we've agreed with our chief risk officer that if we brought in a startup for either a prototype or a POC where no real bank data was being used or no bank integration was being used, that you literally could get them through the process in a matter of weeks. And so from that perspective, they really acted as proactive partners with us to say, okay, we understand that you want to test and learn quickly. You want to speed innovation at the bank to the place where you can eliminate some of the, whether it be paper or the a lot of the overhead. That was just a way that they were able to partner with us so we could actually, you know, innovate more rapidly.
I love the TSA pre-analogy, right, where you can't go around security. You still have to go through it. But if it's a known traveler, one where we kind of can embody this is what it's going to be like, we can accelerate it. And it's great you have that partnership. You know, as we wrap up, I think a couple of the key takeaways from today that both Jim and Doug have brought up is, you know, the world of financial services is evolving very quickly. And where we're feeling the pressure and where we need to learn from isn't by just looking at other banks and financial industry players. We need to look at the Amazons of the world. We need to go to the South by Southwest. We need to learn from the other parts of the industry. And so really want to thank Doug and Jim for joining us today. And thank all of you for joining us and listening. If you like what you hear, please subscribe. You can find back recordings at provoke.fm. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. And as Brett said, you can always engage with us. Find us at Breaking Banks 1 on Twitter, Brett King or Jason Henricks on Twitter. And we love to continue to keep the dialogue going. Brett, anything you'd like to wrap up with?
No, just also check out breakingbanks.com for the back episodes. But Jim and Doug, thanks for joining us today on the show.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
All right, guys, have a great weekend coming up. And Jason, thanks for co-hosting. That's it for Breaking Banks this week. We will see you guys again next week.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.